Good morning. Today I have with me Jose Arzuaga. He's an engineering manager at GitHub. Jose, welcome to Managers Club.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here. I'm super excited to talk to you today.
Great. I'm super excited to have you here as well. Jose, before we start off, could you share about your background and how you got into engineering leadership?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to go a little bit back in time to when I was a school age kid. My mom's a nurse. And early on, I learned from my mom about the power of helping others. And her attitude towards that kind of like planted a seed in me. I started helping everyone I could from a very early age. And for example, all through high school and college, I spent a lot of time as a tutor and mentor for younger students and volunteering for different community organizations. Like there was one that I was very fond of. It's called like Future Scientists and Engineers of America. I was going to high schools and spending like a couple of hours per week with high school students doing like science experiments and solving math problems. And then you have a convention of sorts where all the schools from the region would get together and go through a challenge and whatnot. And that was like super fulfilling for me then. So yeah, in my teens, I was already kind of exposed to a lot of the elements that are like very similar to being a leader. So all of that seemed very familiar to me when I joined the workforce after college. Fast forward a couple of years into my professional career. And I started noticing a trend where I spent a good chunk of my time doing coaching and mentorship of other engineers. And then towards the end of the day, I would chalk up some time to work on my own stuff. So this trend continued on. And I believe it really contributed to me progressing through the different engineering levels at all the organizations that I worked for. Eventually, there came a time when I was working on a large like replatforming project for Univision. And my manager comes to me and he says, hey, like, this project, it's going to be the future of web development here at this company. And I want to build a new team around it with you, Asimai. And I wasn't quite sure what to think immediately when he said that. And I think he knew because he followed that by saying, huh, you look worried. Don't be. Like in my mind, this is a transition to just doing more of what you've already been doing, which seemed to suit you. So I took the job. I was first managing two other engineers and started like helping the team do that migration and then that replatforming, eventually growing the team to 40 plus engineers in less than a year. And yeah, it was a huge thing. It's like a big responsibility and also like in a compressed time frame. So I definitely learned a lot. And that was almost 6 years ago. And though there have been many challenges along the way, I really have no regrets like with the transitioning into an engineering leadership role.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll get to those challenges. That's really amazing, though. Like your first engineering manager job, you managed 40 engineers. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And all right, let's get into that. What are the biggest challenges you face or have faced as an engineering leader?
So there's quite a few. I think that, you know, like prioritizing what to work on is always a good challenge. So I'll use what I learned there to prioritize challenges here. I'd say being an introvert, like for me, it's been very challenging building relationships. Like being an engineering manager, there's a lot of like relationship building that you have to do to be able to work across a company and be able to accomplish like company goals and objectives and use your team as a platform for that. And quite frankly, like even today, even though I have worked on this a lot, it's just hard. Like it's starting cold at a new company, not knowing anyone and just being like, hey, my name is Jose. I'm the manager of this team and I just want to meet you and get to know about you. It's just challenging. I think that there's other things that add fuel to the fire in a way, make it even harder. Like me being an immigrant and English as a second language speaker, I think that there's like some language and cultural barriers that you just have to navigate and learn how to get around so that you can be effective in your communication. So I think that's been really challenging for me. And like I said, I've worked a lot on it, but still to this day, it's something that like I have to be very mindful and intentional about how I communicate with people to get my message across and also be effective.
These are all really great challenges, right? A lot of challenges you have. You introverted. A lot of engineers are introverted. Engineering leaders are introverted. You have English as a second language, wasn't your first language. You've switched companies. Do you have some advice, perhaps, what's worked for you or didn't work for you in some of the situations that you could share with people in that situation?
Yeah, I think that in terms of being an introvert, I think that there was a point in my career where I thought that it was just like something negative and something that I had to squash or, get away from so that I could progress and get better. I think that the moment when I realized that, you know, hey, that's not really a drawback. This is actually something very powerful. And you can just understand better what it means to be an introvert and what are your triggers and how do you find joy? How do you energize yourself? What are those things that fuel your tank and what are the things that drain you? And then you can come up with strategies and how am I going to manage my time? How am I going to interact with people so that I don't end up like completely drained at the end of the day and I can be effective. And then all of the other things that are like really positive things about how do I move those to my advantage, right? Like, I think that there's this TED talk, it's called like the power of introverts. And I think that I drew a lot of inspiration from that so that I had a roadmap of like, how am I going to turn this around? How am I going to make it so that I don't keep feeling like I'm not enough, but I'm just like a different person and can turn this around and you know, just, I don't want to say exploit, but leverage the advantages of that.
I think that's great. I'll have to watch that TED talk because I think that there are certain advantages of being an introvert. And well, a lot of engineers are introverts, so we have that in common with them. Could you share a lesson you've learned as an engineering leader?
Absolutely. That's a great question. My wife always says flexibility is the key to happiness. And this is one of those phrases that kind of makes sense when you hear it, but it's so much more powerful when you actually see it in practice. It goes to the very core, I think, of like growth mindset. And when you look at the global scale in which we work nowadays, where we're exposed to people and situations from all over the world, I think it's impossible to be truly successful operating with a fixed mindset. In the cultural and family context in which I grew up, predicated on deferring to authority, deferring to your elders, and also in there always being like a right way for doing anything. Unfortunately, I brought some of that to my role as an engineer, and I'll admit it kept me from growing and learning as much as I could have back then. It's like a defense mechanism that ends up hurting you in the long run. Going back to a lesson that I learned as an engineering leader, I'd say I learned to be more flexible. I was confronted with the responsibility of serving dozens of engineers at a time to help them learn, grow, and be the very best they could be. And who were like all different people from different backgrounds, different personalities, so on and so forth. So this really made me realize the importance of assuming a growth mindset at all times. So I'd say that's my lesson. Stay flexible, stay nimble, have a growth mindset, and be curious.
I think that's great. And what you pointed out, like, yes, people come from different backgrounds. So if like from your background, you know, like respect authority is a thing, don't challenge authority. And so you have to unlearn some of those things because that's not what's expected in your role. You're actually expected in this culture to like challenge authority and speak up as an engineering leader.
Absolutely. So,
could you speak about hiring? What is your approach to hiring and perhaps diversity in hiring and recruiting?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that diversity in hiring and recruiting is so important. I think that having many perspectives to draw from and building something with all those perspectives taken into account is much more powerful than just like doing the same thing in the same way that has been done like essentially forever. So diversity is something that's top of mind whenever I set out to start sourcing for candidates and hiring. I think that it's diversity, but not diversity for the sake of diversity. I think that we also have to ground that in the needs of the team that you're managing. So I think when I look at my team, I ask myself the question, what do we need right now? How could we make this team even better than it is right now? And more often than not, diversity is part of the solution. I think that, unfortunately, tech, it's a space where there isn't a ton of diversity yet. I think that we're making strides.
And it's very bad in tech, actually, very bad. I wonder if you could say, do you have any like tactics you have, any tactical things you do? Because, yeah, diversity is important, but how do you achieve it?
Yeah, I think that you need to be intentional, right? I think some people think it's like even taboo to talk to your like recruiting partner and say, hey, I need diverse candidates and talk to other engineering managers about this subject. The main thing that I'm getting from them is I'm afraid that if I go to a recruiter and I tell them I need a diverse candidate, I'm going to look like in a bad way.
Really? So, they think they're going to look bad.
Yeah, absolutely. It's because they're this it's, I don't want to call it a belief, but like some people believe that it's, it might even be a little bit like even racist to say I need candidates that fit like this profile. It's like a reverse targeting.
Reverse discrimination.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's a real thing. I don't know if that's, I can't speak to the merits of that. But I do know that. I do know that there's people who are afraid that they feel that if they set out to just hire diverse candidates, that they're like, that there's a problem with that. So I think that the first thing is recognizing that it's okay to want to hire for diversity. I think that I don't really see the problem with that. I think that
the problem I see, sorry if I can interrupt, the problem is engineering managers sometimes don't want to do it because it takes longer and you need to fill the role quickly. So that slows you down.
Yeah, absolutely. That actually goes to my second point because it does take longer. And I think that my second point was going to be about patience, right? It's the first thing that I did. I sat down with my recruiting partner and we were like doing like the intake interview to find out what the role is, what the skills are needed and whatnot. And I told them like really plainly and front, I need a diverse candidate. I cannot keep hiring the same person all over again. And they were like very open to that. They were like, oh, absolutely. Yes, we can totally help you with that. And it does take longer and you have to do a little bit more work depending on like the company that you're on and how much support you have from your recruiting partners. But oftentimes you end up doing a little bit more work because you have to like search like everywhere and scour the internet and the job boards and like everywhere that you can find candidates to like to find them. But they are out there. They are like even communities expressly for certain groups where they meet and they advertise jobs. I think that you just need to take the time and find it. Like there's a community called Tequeria. They're on LinkedIn, they're everywhere. And they have a Slack workspace where you can go. And it's mostly Latinx people, but there's like people of every walk of life. And I think that if you're able to find these communities and like just show up and let them know, hey, this is what I'm looking for, you'll have more chances of success. So I think you just need to maybe reframe a little bit what you think the role of an engineering manager is as it pertains to hiring. And when you do that reframing and stop thinking about, oh, so I'm just here to look at resumes and conduct interviews, and you make a conscious decision to get involved in the process and find like these spots where you can find the candidates that you're looking for, I think that you'll have like better chances of success. So to recap, I'd say, acknowledge what your team needs and what you want. Don't be afraid to ask for what you need and what you want to your recruiting partners, and roll up your sleeves to try and find these candidates because it does take longer, but they're out there and they're like fantastic people willing and able to do the job that you want them to do.
I think that's great. And sometimes you really have to look at what really do you need, because I think sometimes we can get distracted by other job requirements that maybe aren't as essential.
Yeah, I think I have a follow-up to that. I think that there's also something to say about keeping your biases in check. That sometimes you craft this job description and you have an idea of this is the person that I'm going to hire. I'm going to like talk like this, feel like this, sound like this. And I think that if you try and keep your biases in check, start like recognizing them and see when they are getting in the way and doing something about that, I think that you also can unlock many possibilities.
I think that's a great point. What is your advice for managers who are just starting out?
That's an excellent question. I think that's probably like one of the top search terms in Google. So I'm a new manager. Help. I'd say as a new manager just starting out, you probably have many questions about how to do the job or even what's the job supposed to be, right? And I think that's quite normal. Even like one of the failures from the system that we're working is that many people are dropping to a position of management or leadership with little to no guidance on how to do the job or even what the job is. And I think that just being able to recognize that is a very first good step. Then after that, my advice is find a mentor, like someone you trust who can serve as a guide while you take your first few steps as a leader, even someone who can you can ask questions to, like you can do like code review of your decisions, or perhaps just listen to you, see how you're doing, and you can go over your day and get a different take from someone that's more experienced. I really wish I'd done that when I first started as an engineering leader, and having done it later on, I can tell you just how impactful that has been for me, both professionally and personally.
Yeah, and I think mentors are great. Do you have any advice for people? Like, how would they go about finding a good mentor? It's not so obvious for some people.
So the real question too, I think that there's many, I don't want to say many, but there's some places on the internet that you can go for mentorship. There's like Plato, there's Mentor Match. So I think that those are like good resources. I think just like going to like to Google and doing a search for engineering coach or engineering mentor, like there's some communities that exist, and some of them are paid, some of them are free. So I think that you can find some resources. I think that you can also look internally in your companies. To give you an example, at GitHub, there didn't used to be a mentorship program, and someone had that need, was like, I need a mentor, but there's no mentors here. And they just organized themselves and created a mentorship program. And it's been running now for, I'd say, maybe close to 2 years. And it's a fantastic resource for people here in the company. So you can have you can be an IC, you can be a manager, you can be like in any of the disciplines and find someone that you can talk to on a regular basis and get mentorship from. So I think that go look on the internet or talk internally in your company. If there are no resources in your company, then maybe you can be the change that your company needs and start that for all your peers.
What is your workday like, and how do you manage everything you have to do, emails, Slack, all those things as an engineering manager?
My workday is chaos. I'm kidding. It's interesting because I just moved from the West Coast to the East Coast. Before, I have 2 kids, like me and my wife do like the morning dance of getting them ready to school and then doing drop-offs and whatnot. Because I was in the West Coast and I'm working with people all over the United States and also in Europe, I was usually the last person to show up to the party. So my day would start with like meetings. And then at the end of the day, I had a little bit of time to catch up on emails, Slack messages, do a little bit like of async work. Now that I'm on the East Coast, it's the opposite. So we do like the morning dance, drop off the kids, and then I get here. Most people are still like either at the end of the day of their day if they're in Europe, or starting their day if they're like in Mountain Time or like Pacific Time. So that means that I have some time in the morning, like up to like noon, to just do a little bit of work and reflection. So I start my day by reviewing the following day. Let me back out. So I'll talk about how I end my day, and then I'll start from there. I end my day by doing a reflection of how that day went. I have a template with different questions that I answer that help me take a step back from the day and for the hustle of everything that's going on, and just reflect on how are things going, how did I react to different things that happened during the day, what did I actually accomplish, and how can I be better, and who from my team need help, and when. So I start my day then reviewing that reflection, and that kind of gives me an idea of the different things that I need to pay attention. There's always long-standing things that are happening, and also meetings that are in my calendar, but like those first 30 minutes of my day, it's like my North Star for how my day is going to go. After that, I take a couple of hours to do a little bit of async work. So we're remote and asynchronous. So a lot of the work that I do is going to be like reading through like absolutely everything that I can find, and then doing some writing too. So I devote good 2-3 hours per day to that. And then I start meeting with people and engaging in different conversations in Slack. And that's essentially throughout the day, throughout the end of my day.
I guess that's good. Yeah, when you can offset your day a little bit, it gives you some space. You actually have a template that you fill out every day, like a form?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. I'll share that with you if you want to put it in the episode notes.
Yeah, I'd love to see like what questions you have on the template. That's really interesting. What's a personal habit that's contributed to your success?
That's a good question too. Personal habit. That's a hard question, actually. I'll take a minute to think about this one.
Okay, take your time.
I'd say we just talked about it, actually. I think that time that I take for reflection every day, I think that's been very powerful. When I wrap my day with those like 30 minutes of reflection and go over my day, all the conversations that I had, I'm able to spot themes and takeaways and action items for the next day and beyond. I think that helps me with perspective. Right? I think that being farther removed from all of the day's work and conversations, that allows me to think more clearly about the things that happened, how we reacted to them, and how I can improve. I think that when I started doing that, I started like seeing change and improvement in the way that I was operating. It also helped me with, I felt less stressed because I was able to do a brain dump of all these things that I had in my head and I was thinking about, and being able like to put them in writing helped me like settle and transition into out of work and into family time. I think that's been really impactful in my career.
That sounds really awesome. Yes, I really want to look at this tempo. I think it's a great suggestion. Jose, is there a tool? We talked previously about like Notion, but is there a tool that you use that really helps you in your work?
I'd say Notion, definitely. I think that I have my Notion setup customized. It kind of looks like a Scrum board where I can create cards and I have like different levels of urgency and priority and whatnot. And by just like taking a look at that, I'm able to get a glimpse of this is all the work that I have scheduled and this is what's most important. I use that in combination with my calendar. I try and not keep to-do lists. I mean, that they just give me anxiety. I see a never-ending to-do list and I just keep chipping at it and it never ends. So I try and like whenever I have a to-do that I cannot do right away, I just put it in my calendar and it's gone. And then when the time comes, then I'll deal with that. I think that has been really helpful. But in terms of a resource or tool, I'd say like Notion. Lately, I've been experimenting.
Just say a little bit more about Notion. So I use Notion and I've tried it on again, off again. To your point, it can be a little daunting and complicated. And do you have any advice on it or how to use it successfully?
Yeah, so I think I read or watched like a gazillion videos of like how to configure Notion. And I hear you. I think that it's so powerful and so customizable, then it's also daunting. I was coming off of using Evernote, which I really liked. And I was also using kind of like Asana for keeping my personal work. So I use like a whole bunch of like different teams of things like Asana, Trello. And when I started like working with Notion, I think that I came with the mindset of trying to replicate like the previous setup that I had. And I think that's what made it complicated. So I changed mindset. And I was like, huh, let me see what is that I need right now. And I'm going to try and do this without trying to replicate anything. And let's see how it comes up. And after that, like it was working out. I was like, oh, so what's the next thing that I need? And I started like little by little, like changing my workflows and adding like databases in Notion, like for the different things that I do and whatnot. And it turned into like the thing that I have now that I do. So I think the advice would be like, take it slow. Don't try to necessarily copy something or someone else. Just see what's the simplest way in which Notion can solve your problem. And then iterate from that to get to like the very best experience that you can get out of the tool. And I'd say like that advice applies to like any tool that you're onboarding into.
Okay, no, I think it's good. Yes, because there's a lot of Notion templates and stuff you can download. And you're right, there are lots of videos. It really can feel overwhelming at times, but it is an amazing tool. If you could recommend one book to managers, what would it be and why?
So I have a couple of books in mind. One is The Manager's Path by Camille Fournier. And then the other one is probably Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. About The Manager's Path, I think that many engineering leaders I talk to share the same experience as me, where we start this journey of leadership without fully understanding what we're signing up for. So if I were to pull out just a thread from the many that this book has, I'd say that when you look at why people decide to transition into management, you find that a common answer is to keep progressing or getting promoted X company. And I think that's because many companies still treat engineering and engineering management as a single path. And I think that folks find themselves forced to make the transition because there really aren't that many other options for you to keep advancing and growing. Unfortunately, like many people don't even know that options exist outside of their environment. So I think that Camille's book does a great job at painting that picture. It really shows you the range of what's possible so you can make an informed decision. Based on what you want for your career, you can just take a look at the book and come up with some decisions. So, hey, like this actually seems enticing or compelling to me. Versus just like going into the wild with no notion of what to expect and what's possible. Yeah, absolutely. I think that the one by Brené Brown, Dare to Lead, I think that I like how Brené challenges what corporate culture is even today. Like the kind of like this notion of you just have to like brave things and show power and show authority. I think that there's so much power in showing vulnerability. And power and also like courage. You have to have the courage to be vulnerable and show that side of you to your team. And I think that when you really do, you open the doors for a lot of like trust building that you can later on use as a platform for everyone involved, like learning and growing and being their best selves. So I think that I absolutely love like the everything that Brené Brown has to offer, especially like when she applied her research to corporate culture and work.
Yeah, she has some really good books, I agree. And I think she's also done some TED Talks and other videos as well. We were talking earlier, so right now we just finished wrapping up, I think, at both our companies, like annual reviews, performance reviews. So I wanted to ask you how you do not just that, but general career coaching, career development of your staff. Do you have some thoughts you could share on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when you become someone's engineering leader, I think that the very first thing that you need to do is build trust with them. So I'd say there's a progression of trust, observation, coming up with opportunities and feedback that you need to go through. It's kind of like a cycle. Once you build the trust, you can get close to people and you can use that to observe how they're operating, how they conduct themselves, and all these things that you can later on use to find opportunities, things that they're really good at. Then after you do that pairing, then it's a matter of observing and then giving continuous feedback. It's the workflow that I follow. It's worked for me. I think that there's, of course, challenges. I think that for me, giving feedback has been a challenge, like ever since I started in the workforce, something that I have worked on a lot. But to this day, like still like giving feedback, it's hard. It's like this notion. Yeah.
Sorry, I said we talked earlier about giving uncomfortable feedback. That, like, do you have thoughts on that? Because that's really hard for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's a notion of you want to be nice. You don't want to offend anyone. You don't want to be mean to anyone. So I think that at least me, with my cultural background, that's just not nice. Like, I think there's this idiom that translates roughly to, if you don't have anything good to say, just don't say anything. And I think that kind of hurts us, right? Because I think that at the end of the day, like, feedback is a present that you have to give to other people. It's just being in that mindset to receive it or to give it, that's hard. And that's why I talk about trust, because I think that when you really build trust, you can use that like a platform for being able to give that feedback. I think that I'd had to give like uncomfortable feedback many times. And I think that something that gets me through it is I heard someone say, I really can't remember who it is, how far you get in life or the trajectory of your growth, something like that, is directly related to the amount of uncomfortable conversations that you're willing to have. So I think that when I think about that, okay, one, this is going to help me grow. Two, this is going to help them grow. And three, what's the worst that can happen? Someone might be upset, but then that's always something that you can repair. And as long as you're candid, but you're kind, and you are able to show people that you're coming from a standpoint of wanting to help and wanting to, like, for them to grow, I think that you're in good footing. And relationships have high points and low points. And I think it's just a matter of being able to recognize those and do the work to, like, repair whatever needs repairing.
I think that's awesome. I'm going to have to look up that quote because it's really interesting. And yeah, like, I'll tell people when I give them this feedback, which I've learned is, like, I'm not saying this to hurt your feelings. I'm saying this to help you, but it could hurt your feelings when I tell you, but that's not my intention.
Absolutely. So, I think that's a great way of doing it. I think I might try that. Yeah. I think that something else about giving feedback, I think that you need to be, like, very mindful and intentional about, like, the wording that you use. But more importantly, make sure that the other person is getting the message. Like, I had situations where I go in and I do my thing, give the feedback, whatnot. And then let's say that it's like a performance review. We had that conversation. I think that I made my points clear. I got my message through. And then when we have the next conversation, which is about rewards and compensation based on performance, then it's a total surprise. It starts the questions and it's like, oh, why did this happen? Like, why am I not getting more? And then I found myself, like, perplexed, and I thought I took care of this. And no, I did not take care of it. I was just not clear. And I think that's, like, that desire to, like, not be mean or not make people feel bad, I think that sometimes gets in the way and you end up, like, sugarcoating and even, like, unconsciously sugarcoating the message to the point where people just don't get the message. And then it becomes something shocking and surprising later on. So I'd say my advice would be for people to be as clear as you can be. It's hard, it's uncomfortable, but it'll be better later on. I think that, so something that Brené says in her book, actually, it's clear is kind, unclear is unkind. And I think that's what I go with.
Yeah, that's a great point. We could talk more about that. There's a lot of cultural things there. And, like you're saying, if you're too nice, like, I've seen examples where a manager feels that they've given a lot of corrective feedback in a performance review, but the person leaving they feel like it was they were doing great, which is like a total disconnect because of that, trying to be too nice. Jose, it's been great to have you here on Managers Club. Thank you so much. You've been very generous with your time. If people want to connect with you afterwards, reach out to you, ask any questions, what would be the best way?
Absolutely. So I'm both in Twitter and LinkedIn. So I'm Jose in the Arena in both. So that's how you can find me.
That's a great handle, by the way, Jose in the Arena. Good.
Yeah. Like,
all right. Very good. Jose, thanks again so much for being here.
Ah, totally. Yeah. It was my pleasure to be here. I really appreciate it.